Welcome to Software Gone Wild, the podcast focused on everything software-defined in networking. Today we'll talk about a very interesting topic. There is this new hype slowly emerging called model-driven networking. I guess it's all based on Yang models that we've been talking about but never got anywhere for probably half a decade at least. I have a great guest that will help me figure out what this model-driven stuff is all about, namely Jeff Tansura, who is the chair of IETF Routing Working Group. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Hi, Ivan. I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me on the podcast and looking forward to discussing this rather interesting topic.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time and being here. So, Jeff, before we go into these models, I don't know how many listeners are familiar with who you are and what you're doing. So let's do a little bit of history to start with.
So I've been in the network industry for 20 plus years before joining Redbeck Networks, Ericsson, always on operator side. So I went through operations, network design, network architecture into dark side, so vendor side. I know how operations work, what it takes to configure routers. So at my time, I got CCE certified, Ericsson Expert certified, so I'm a very hands-on person. In IETF, I'm chairing Routing Working Group, which mostly focused on fast convergence, on anything which is not specific to a particular protocol. So new architectures, young models, which don't fall under, let's say, OSP, FSS, or BGP, or any other protocol. So a lot of glue between different work.
Okay, so the Routing Working Group doesn't own any of the protocols. They have specific working groups, right?
That's right.
So you guys like own the routing table?
Yeah, you could say so. Also, we work as a semaphore. So if there is new interesting stuff and it doesn't have home yet, we will take it. We will help people to present it. We will, if needed, move it forward to another working group. For example, last IETF in Buenos Aires 2 weeks ago, Facebook presented their ILA, so it's a separation of locator stuff. So there's no particular home for it. We gave them time and place to present. There was a lot of interest. So this is what we do.
That stuff they do with IPv6, right?
Exactly.
Where the lower bits are fixed and the higher bits are dynamically translated or something like that, right?
That's correct. And given their size and power, I believe they're getting vendors to implement it already. So it's going to happen. Pay attention.
Oh, wow. That's nice to hear because I was looking at that and went like, yeah, this is cool. Why is no one doing that? So it's going to happen.
Stay tuned, yes. And so Piotr Lopukhov did pretty good presentation. You know Piotr, for sure.
Of course. Oh, yeah, he said Facebook now. That's true.
Yeah, so he did very good presentation on mechanics. He also proposed a few more drafts how to distribute metadata in guess what protocol? BGP, obviously.
Oh, no. Who would ever think about using BGP for that?
So all pieces are coming together.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Distribution for metadata, ability to decouple location from address, and it works pretty well for Facebook to my understanding.
That's really nice. Okay, let's focus on what we are supposed to be discussing today, although that discussion about Facebook and IPv6 might be more interesting. What is this model-driven networking stuff all about?
Anyone who has touched router in the last 20 years knows you go into CLI, you type conft or edit or anything else given on your vendor preference, and then you configure stuff. If you are lucky, you can commit afterwards. If you are unlucky, configuration gets accepted as you type, and if God forbid you type something wrong, you're out.
Yeah, that's a question I ask at my SDN workshops. Did you learn about reload in 5 before or after you cut yourself off from the router?
Yeah. I remember doing debug all and debug BGP, some other stuff on 7500, and then you had to drive 3 hours to reboot the router.
Yeah, it was only 30 minutes for me, but I cut Slovenia off from internet, so yeah.
You're a famous person, for sure.
No, this was more than 20 years ago. We had only a couple of customers, and there was no e-commerce yet, so it wasn't that bad. Yeah, sorry. We configured things using CLI, and we all love to hate it.
Between CLI and new stuff, we've tried SNMP obviously didn't work. It was pretty okay for read-only stuff. Writing through SNMP was a nightmare. We tried to standardize all the MIPS. However, every vendor has a bunch of proprietary MIPS which don't interwork with each other. So it wasn't a big success. I'm not talking about protocol, which is on itself not a very successful one, which led ITF to begin with, and we will talk about OpenConfig later on, to conclusion, we need to do something different. We need to be able to configure device independently of its physical characteristics. Since we are in virtualization age, we need to be able to configure device, whether it's physical or virtualized one. We need to configure a protocol or any property of this device in a way it's not dictated by a vendor. So if you look at how Young started, it was driven by particular companies, and first Young drafts, by the way, there are 200 today, were representing particular router structure. So no good. We just replaced CLI by Young model, but still very specific to the device, very specific to particular implementation of protocol on the device. So same things, just differently. So obviously, service providers didn't particularize the idea because it didn't match their expectation. And this is how OpenConfig group came into place. So the idea of OpenConfig is to have vendor-independent model. Obviously, it has to be model-driven, so you don't want to go and configure through CLI anything. The most important property of model-driven configuration is done through machine-to-machine interface. There are different protocols to deliver this information, which could be NetConf, RESTConf, very recent one, gRPC done by Google through Protobuf. It has to be vendor neutral. So if you want to configure BGP, you shouldn't really care whether you configure it on Cisco, Juniper, or Ericsson router. Most important stuff, it has telemetry built in. So you configure router BGP, you configure neighbor IP address. At this moment, you start negotiating BGP parameters. After you are done and your session came up, you would like to know what's going on. So if you look at model itself, it has operational state built in, which gives you ability to compare state you have established, so operational state, state as is, to an intention. So if your intention was to negotiate only L3 VPN address family and you got IPv6, something went wrong. Gives you ability to take action immediately and possibly in an automatic way. This is what led to last 2 years of work on Young, really to be able to address these requirements from service providers based on real use cases, including telemetry and being completely vendor neutral.
From a programmer perspective, what you just described seems like standardized data structures.
Absolutely. In order to be able to talk to any API, you need a binding. Binding provides translation from protocol or from the model you're using and programming language class structure into something the model on the device itself can understand. Let's define what is programmable network and programmable interface. The network is programmable when and if control data plane provide an interface that allow state of the network be modified and monitored through machine-readable data-driven APIs.
Okay.
Programmable interfaces should expose capabilities. So not only you should be able to configure it, but you also need to understand what is supported and what should not be configured. It should provide inventory, so you should be able to get full networking graph to understand how device looks like, all the interfaces, sub-interfaces on the device, however, also how the device is connected to other ones and see full picture. Here we get to the topology. You need to understand how your topology looks like and all the artifacts of the topology. So if you think about a PMPLS network, connectivity, for example, SRLGs, jitter delays, anything relevant to the link. By building this hierarchical structure, you get full networking graph whereon you can apply services. And telemetry, we discussed it. Anytime you change something in a network, anytime you want to look at your network, you should have full view what's going on.
This sounds great, but the skeptical me is always saying, well, how much of this is real? First, we need to define what the data structures are. And I guess you would be using Yang for that, right?
Absolutely.
Yang as such has been standardized for years. How many standardized Yang models do we have at the moment?
200 plus.
How many of them are implemented?
let's take a step back. There are different sources of young models. So obviously, we started with IETF, where we provided kind of device-independent models, protocol models, policy models. Every vendor gives us their native models. So if you look at IOSXR, for example, all the young files are published on GitHub. You could go and work with them. And I expect every vendor at some point to open their models so they could be consumed by application developers. So today, to my knowledge, only Cisco IOSXR models are publicly available. Probably Juniper as well. I'm just not familiar.
I don't know about Yang models. I think Nexus OS and probably also Junos can give you their XSD schema.
Yeah, they could, but if you want specifically Yang files, they're available on GitHub for IOSXR.
Yeah.
So you could go look and... So why is there a difference between IETF models and vendor native models? Every device, every OS has some unique capabilities. In IETF, when we are talking about, let's say, MPLS, we try to define common blocks supported by every vendor. We are having weekly calls on MPLS model where we represent 7-8 vendors. And we are trying to agree, actually, it's quite solid, we already agreed, on common block of functionality supported by everybody. So this is what everybody can do.
But isn't that like the least common denominator of whatever anyone thought might make sense to implement?
It is, that's right. However, Yang give you ability to easily augment base structures. So you could have base structure, which is supported by everybody, and then every vendor provide their own augmentation, which could be used if you use this particular device, this particular OS level, or you could just fall back to the base block. Base blocks is mandatory. Augmentation is optional.
Yeah, but that augmentation is then like Microsoft or Cisco's embrace and extend, right? The moment you start using that, you're tied into a single vendor yet again.
Given it's not mandatory, and most networks today are multi-vendor, so before trying to configure something according to the structure, which is augmented, you could always query, do you support this actually? And if you don't, you always fall back to your base block, which is quite comprehensive. It just doesn't have all the nice knobs and things vendor have implemented the last 20 years.
Okay, so today you have a model how you can configure and monitor, let's say, baseline MPLS.
That's right.
By the way, is this in draft form or is it already an RFC?
All protocol-related Yang models done in IETF are still drafts. They are very solid. Most of them are being implemented, at least to some degree. However, there are no RFCs yet.
Okay. Now that you mentioned that they are being implemented, honestly, maybe I'm not looking in the right parts of vendor documentations, but I've never ever seen anyone saying we support this particularly Yang model. So how far along are implementations?
I'm mostly familiar with Cisco work a lot. I work a lot with Cisco people. So as of IOSXR 6.0, all models are documented and available on GitHub, so it could be consumed. Cisco also provides a framework called Yang Development Tools, which is a very nice one. You feed Yang model into it, it spits out binding for particular languages. So today, I think only Python is supported. They're looking in Go, Ruby, C++, some others, which gives ability to application developers easily consume any model and not thinking about how do I format my XML or JSON file. Binding will take care. So it's very high-level calls, create a service, configure BGP without really formatting things. Again, it's my personal understanding since I work mostly with Cisco people. They're quite advanced. I know they've implemented a bunch of OpenConfig models. The most popular is BGP one. I know also Junos implemented it. As of today, if you run XR 6.0 or newer release, you could configure your device using either NetConfig, RestConfig, or gRPC Yang.
And on Juno's site, they were talking about supporting OpenConfig for a long while, and they should be shipping around now, I think.
Yeah, so I've seen video where they...
Yeah, I've seen that video 6 months ago. It's just that I couldn't find any command mentioned in that video in Juno's documentation.
You know, it would be unfair to Juniper to put them into position where they are kind of less. So I think it would be really good to get someone from Juniper to comment on where they are, when it's coming, and what are the plans with regards to implementation.
Agreed. Now, I just wanted to point out that they've been showing that video for quite a long time, and the feature wasn't shipping, which really annoys me. Okay, so there are implementations coming out. So this thing will become useful in real life pretty soon.
Absolutely.
Now, you also mentioned OpenConfig. What's that?
OpenConfig is the informal group of operators and some cloud providers. Initially, we saw mostly work from Google, led by Anish. Then we saw more and more service provider getting into the space. So today, pretty much everybody who is tier one, who is big, who is sick of using CLI is contributing. So the beauty of the work is it's completely open, at least operators. Vendors are not allowed, which is good too, I would say. And they create models based on their use cases. So imagine they run LTVPN and they want to be able to configure it on every device in a way they do it. Working group is gathering requirements. They review actual configuration. They develop model draft. They review it with the implementations. They bring it to IETF, which is very nice because I remember seeing messages such as OpenConfig is killing IETF, OpenConfig is replacing IETF. It's important to know we work together. There's a lot of cooperation, and at the end, OpenConfig understands. If what they produce cannot be consumed or cannot be used, will not be used on real networking devices, it's worth nothing. So many people from vendor side working together, we help them to better understand how things are implemented inside. So part which was absolutely invisible before. And we come up with common models which meet their business requirements because from their perspective, it's a compilation of business intent. And we also provide the ability to implement it on our devices, being Cisco, Juniper, Ericsson, Alcatel. So common work is the result of vendor independent model which passes all the checks. So when you run Trupian, you know it's going to work with any other IETF models. And it's a big topic, so probably we are not going to discuss it now. During this podcast, we recently introduced notion of schema mounts, where you can mount one model under another, so which creates another hierarchy of classes. Probably, again, topic for another discussion.
Oh, that's interesting. So you can just take one model and sort of include it into another model.
Yes. So what we created two tables, logical network inventory and network instance. So this bar, LNE and I, gives you ability to mount anything below it. It could be virtualized, it could be physical, it could be really anything which can pass packets. And it gives you ability to build very nice hierarchy, which is very easy then to represent in class hierarchy in your code.
Oh, that would be like a perfect representation for VRFs, for example, right?
Absolutely. And to make it even easier, the IETF YAML library is going to be used to enumerate available models. So you just take one in library, you're pretty much done.
Okay, now that you already mentioned this dichotomy between OpenConfig and IETF, how are you guys getting along?
Very well. So on personal level, most people in OpenConfig, there are people we interacted on personal level, on vendor, customer level for many, many years. A lot of them are friends. It's not like it's a known group of people coming and dictating. We've known each other for a long time. We know how to work together. And we do work together because, again, in order to dance, it requires at least two, if not more. Bringing together what device can do and what they want device to do gives ability to produce model which is useful and consumable. Anyone who is interested and not a vendor, they're open to anyone who has something to contribute. All the work available on GitHub, so it's completely open. All the comments, all the ongoing work is open. So I'm a subscriber to this as well. I see what's going on. There are no secrets.
Okay, but one has to ask oneself, okay, Isn't this the work that IETF should be doing? Why did they have to start on their own?
Fortunately or unfortunately, IETF represents many different organizations, which could be rather political, have their own agendas, and obviously have as a goal to bring to IETF something which would require not too many changes on their running staff, because changes cost money. So you see a bit of disconnect between what service providers wanted and what vendors wanted. To some degree, OpenConfig had been created out of frustration about its discontinuity.
Okay, so the service providers effectively said, we have enough. Now we'll tell you what we need to run our networks.
Yeah, so we'll tell you what to do, in other words. And the choice on IETF was, we either ignore you or we work together. Since we are a consensus-driven organization in IETF, we want to work together with everybody who has something to say, so which creates a lot of very good interworking. So OpenConfig people are part of design team working on Young. They're contributing to every protocol work. Some of protocol work, for example, segment routing, is driven by OpenConfig. Besides kind of common interests between vendors and service providers, they're also very good personal relationship. We work together very well. So the output is common effort of service providers and vendors and people who really know Young and help to model the stuff properly.
Okay, now let's move back from the, I don't want to say political, but let's say process topics to the technology. When we started doing the deep dive, you mentioned telemetry. We all know that we've been doing telemetry for a long time with SNMP. And now there are all these new ideas about doing telemetry some other way. So let's start with a simple question. What's wrong with SNMP? Why is everyone running away from SNMP?
If you look at SNMP as such, it's not a protocol which has been designed to deliver messages in a proper way. It was mostly, let me poll you once in 10, 20, 30 minutes. I think all of us remember what happened 10 years ago when we started to poll routers more often. They were just crashing. SNMP process was taking all the processing power.
Oh, you mean like losing BGP sessions and spanning tree dying and resulting in loops and small things like that, yeah.
So since then, there was some optimization, but still not good enough. It's still mostly based on poll structure. Ability to send traps is there. However, it's very high level and it's not fairly well designed. So the idea about new telemetry or new wall telemetry is to be able to provide constant flow of data, what we call streaming. So a device should be able to stream constantly information about its state, its operational state, what's going on, what's passing through. Ideally, it should be also reasonably structured and aggregated, so you are not streaming terabits of data. If you look at Plain Engine, it could do up to 40 terabit data a day. We don't want a router to generate this amount of data. The idea that if you can properly aggregate and structure data, you can just provide summaries and diffs between what has been sent and what's new. I know all big vendors are working on streaming models, so how the stuff is going to work. And why do you need model for this? When you receive structured data and you already have a model, you just change operational state. It's very easy to consume. It's very transparent to application on top to consume this data, because data on itself is worthless unless there is an application which can analyze this data and do something with it. So it provides full stack from quite low-level information to agnostic to this low-level information application, which can consume it and decide what's going on. Do I need to change something? Is it okay? Do I meet my SLAs? Should I generate report to customers saying something's going on? So business logic, in other words.
Okay, to oversimplify things a little bit. With SNMP, we were doing polling and we were reading the same set of variables every minute or whatever the interval was. And now with streaming telemetry, if I got it right, you just tell the device which variables you would poll every minute, and then you step away and the device sends the data at regular intervals automatically without you ever asking the device to deliver the data.
To put it simple, yes. To make it more complicated and more scalable, you would also do some aggregation and put your data in a way it's easier to consume northbound. So if you just send raw data, someone has to get the data to put it together, make sure there is no reordering. So you would like to do this kind of first level of aggregation on the device itself.
So it's like the newer versions of NetFlow, where you can specify how the device should aggregate data before sending it to NetFlow Collector.
Yeah, I think it's very, very much driven by client-server communication, where client not only streaming information, but also does some more intelligent stuff. And we see silicon vendors providing more and more co-processing to be able to do this directly on silicon, for example. So you stream it directly from line card or your silicon rather than letting go through route processor or Intel route processor.
The idea is to reduce the load on the main CPU and just stream straight from the line card.
Absolutely, especially if you're thinking about low-level details such as counters, number of frames allowed, drop, why dropped. So all this information doesn't really need to go all the way up to route processor. If you have enough power to structure this information properly, send it from the line card, everybody would benefit, right?
Mm-hmm. All this sounds great, but it's still a little bit abstract. So for people who love protocols, let's put some names onto these ideas. So we already said that the models are usually encoded in Yang. For configuring the boxes, you would probably use NetConf or, as you said, RestConf. What about the streaming telemetry? What protocols would you use there?
So as we see, and it's mostly pushed by Google today, gRPC is becoming de facto the standard. There's implementation on Cisco Juniper devices. So I'm not familiar with any other, but to my understanding, if you want to work with Google, you have to have gRPC. I would like to take a step back for a second. There is also an important difference between ephemeral configuration and read configuration when you touch the configuration file on the device. Talk about protocol. So we'll come back to telemetry. Initially, the only protocol used for Yang models known was NetConf. However, NetConf, while very good for configuring devices, it gives the ability to edit config, log config, compare config, rollback config. So extremely powerful. It wasn't so good for ephemeral configuration. Ephemeral means it's not stored. So if device reloads, it comes back without this configuration.
Yeah, NetConf was more or less the protocol to edit the configuration file.
Absolutely. Which brought us to RestConf, based on HTTP, which more lightweight, a bit more limited than NetConf, however, gives us ability to provide ephemeral configuration, and gRPC is ephemeral configuration at most. So when you configure things, as long as router or device you configure runs, you use it. If it reloads, it comes up without any configuration provided. So if you look at, for example, what we do in PSAP work when we provision LSP, mm-hmm. The last thing you want is the device to come back in 2 hours with some outdated configuration. So most of this configuration is ephemeral. As long as you run, it's okay, it's up to date. If you go down and you come back, you have no idea, and it's up to client, so up to your network management or SDN controller to update this information to reprovision all the LSPs.
Mm-hmm.
So back to telemetry. As we said, it has to provide constant stream of data. So it's going to look like I'm interested in particular set of configuration. And again, in Yang case, you just represent it, for example, as a leaf in your tree. I'm interested in counters on particular interface. When you configure this kind of capability on the device itself, it will start sending you information. It could be raw data. So every, 10 seconds, I'll send you an update, or ideally it should be intelligent enough to say I'm 10 seconds later and this is the delta between previous value and what I sent you. When you gather all this information and you apply to the device model, you should have full picture of what's going on with the device itself. When you take a bigger view, which is your network graph, you should have full view of what's going on with your network. So it should be superset of IPFix, superset of SNMP, superset of your NMS polynet in single place. Sounds a bit like OTP, but this is the intention, and I think we are getting there, slowly but surely.
By the way, another thing just popped into my mind. I had an S-Flow discussion not so long ago. It turns out that S-Flow can also send any telemetry data from the device. So is anyone considering using S-Flow for streaming telemetry?
On virtualized devices, for sure. We know that OVS is capable of sending S-Flow information. However, it gives you some subset of information. You cannot encode everything in S-Flow. So while very efficient, widely supported, there's also open source, you cannot provide all the information you need. So you would need to augment your S-Flow with some additional source of information, being SNMP, inventory, something else. With the way we do telemetry today, we are thinking about full stack. So anything from counter to memory usage, to CPU usage, number of routes, to anything available, anything could be read from the device itself, should be able to be configured and modeled and sent to the analyzer.
If I understood correctly, to do that, you need, well, it's good if you have an underlying Yang model to describe the data, right?
Yeah.
So you're effectively reinventing the MIPS in Yang now.
This is how Yang started. The only difference now, it is real standard. So no enterprise MIPS, no proprietary stuff here. If something is implemented, we would like to see done through IETF, approved by the community. And ideally also open source and available on GitHub, so application developers can take it and do something with it. It gives ability to create hierarchy of classes. So it's not on the number of packets passed through, but now you can correlate number of packets with IS number, with business SLA, and provide full view of the service, as an example.
Okay, one last question. You've been mentioning Google quite a lot during this 40 minutes. Let's put it this way. It looks like the main audience today would be the big cloud providers and the tier one service providers. Is this thing also usable for smaller networks and maybe enterprises?
Absolutely. So if you look at people who participate today, so being Orange, British Telecom, AT&T, all of them have research groups which are focusing on research and not so much on production. So smaller tier two, tier threes, especially, they don't have this luxury and budget. However, from beneficial perspective, it would be even more beneficial to them because of limited resource and operation and honestly, inability to get well-trained people. We know it's very difficult to find good people, people with experience, people who know more than two vendors. The fact that we are abstracting vendor differences, that we are providing single intent interface, which through binding would instantiate different things, give them ability to do things tier ones do same way, but with no this big investment into research and development.
But I think we have to keep in mind that the primary users of this new data structures are programmers, right?
Yes, that's right.
So if you don't have a programming team, there's not much benefit you can get out of these developments.
Things have changed significantly. So far, it's mostly talking. However, we see, again, big tier ones talking about open sourcing their stuff. We see AT&T, Donovan, Microsoft. We see all those people talking about, you know, before we thought if we keep it to ourselves, it will give us competitive advantage. It didn't. If we open source it, if we get more people working on it, it will make software better. We will benefit from it. However, everybody else would benefit from it. And I see this as clear direction from all big companies, at least most of big companies. So from tier three operator perspective, if IT have done their work, if vendors properly implemented it, and big tier ones have open sourced their work, it's mostly integration effort, and they would usually benefit from open source, maybe contribute from their side, and be able to use this vendor independent structure, which will give them ability not to have all these highly trained people, but people who can really integrate stuff and understand the integration, but maybe not so much the protocols and, you know, being networking experts.
Okay, I'm in slight disagreement here, because when you experience problems, you still need a networking expert to troubleshoot it.
Absolutely agree with you. However, not at this number. You don't need to have 30 people who are experts. And if you are small, I don't know, especially if you're an enterprise.
Well, if you are wasting CCIEs to type in VLAN numbers, you are wasting money anyway.
So the intention here, again, to make life simpler and focus, give even smaller guys ability to focus on their business. And let us networking people to focus on what we do the best, networking.
Okay, have to ask one more question. Now that you mentioned big guys open sourcing their efforts, is there anything already out there that I could take and start using in a smaller network?
It's a good question. Specifically from service provider community, I hear a lot of talks about open sourcing. I'm yet to see the cut.
Okay, so everyone is talking about it and nothing has been realized yet. Or at least we are not aware of anything being available at the moment.
So on vendor side, yeah, I'm less familiar with Juniper, so I don't want to make Juniper less. On Cisco side, there's great development called YDK, YAM Development Kit. It has a lot of examples. It's open source. It's available on GitHub. So you could take any data model and generate data-driven APIs. If you have someone who can write code in Python, C++, or any other language supported by the development kit, you could just take any ATF model or any model provided by your vendor and auto-generate all the APIs. So this can be used. There are lots of examples how to use it. I saw a demo by Cisco, and it looked really good. So later on, I'll provide some pointers to this. I really like the way it's done. Again, they're trying to be open and there's significant effort to make things better.
Perfect. So let's wrap it up here. Jeff, if people want to know more about what you're doing, how can they get in touch with you? Are you on Twitter? Are you blogging? Any other social media?
I wish I was more on Twitter. I'm not using Twitter that much. I'm mostly reading. Sometimes I blog on LinkedIn. Sometimes I blog or rather react on something posted on your blog, on Packet Pusher blog. And I'm always available on email. And if there are any questions, I'll be more than happy to take them, to review them, to answer them.
Thank you, Jeff. Really interesting. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ivan. Thank you, audience. I hope this was of interest and hopefully we'll continue talking about this. And it's really happening. So watch this space.
Thank you. You've been listening to Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on everything software-defined. I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and you can find me at ipspace.net or on Twitter as @iOSHints. And if you want to know more about SDN, why don't you go to sdn.ipspace.net, where you'll find presentations, free videos, webinars, workshops, books, everything you need to get your SDN career started. But don't forget, we call it software-defined, but in reality, it still runs on hardware.